cool. Oh, man. Yesterday was really fun. Yesterday, Oliver, we had our family birthday party, and we just had family members come, and we had it at Mamita's house, which is what London calls her grandma, and Ollie just calls her Ah. So we settled with Mamita, and we had this Patty themed it like an aviation theme, so it was like vintage airplanes, and it was really sweet and really cute, and it was kind of cool because I didn't get the theme at first. I was just like, does he like airplanes? Do we know? Like he likes hitting things. That's what he likes. Like just have balls and baseball bats everywhere. And so she was like, no, it goes because the theme is the year has flown by. And I was like, man, wow, babe, that's pretty cool. And so they had pictures, you know, she put pictures everywhere. And my job was hang this here, put this, you know, just the job of like the guy that doesn't really know what's going on. So I'm just hanging stuff, moving stuff. And at one point I'm like looking at all the pictures of Ollie, and I was like, man, it's so cool. Like, it's kind of random though. Like, I don't understand. And Patty goes, I took the picture of the first day of every month for the first year. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's pretty good. You need to put that on Pinterest. That's amazing. And it was so cool because Patty's sister does, like, you know those cool cakes you see on, like, Cake Wars and stuff? Like the fancy decoration ones? She does that. So, like, for when I turned 30, she did, my wife did a nerdy 30 birthday. And, true story, I'm not making this up. And she's like, well, I know you like Star Wars and Star Trek, so I thought I'd do two cakes for you. So she did the comm link of the Star Trek. And then for Star Wars, she's like, well, everyone's favorite character I looked online was Jar Jar Binks. And I was like, what? But she made the Jar Jar Binks' head. And it was pretty cool. So I didn't knock it. I was like, all right, I like Jar Jar Binks. but London, it was so funny. She made this airplane cake, and the prop actually spun on it, and it was, it's pretty intricate, it's pretty awesome. I'm hyping her up, and so it gets to the table, and then Oliver's like, we're like, all right, Oliver, let's blow it out, because London blew out her candles on her first birthday. Like Patty was practicing for like the whole month before, like putting a candle for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, like blow this out. You will blow out this candle on your first birthday. And so with Ollie, you know, the second child, you know. It's like you love your first child so much, and the second child's like, "Yeah, you too, buddy." And so there was no prep on the candle work. It was just the cake was set down, the candle was in the cake, and it was just this mini cake because he had his own personal one. And it gets there, and he's looking at it, and he goes, like he wants to blow it out. And the Patty snuck him. She's like, "Let's get the show on the road. Let's get some cake." And so. He was just like with his cake, he sat there, and like if you know Oliver, he likes thinking about stuff and making you laugh. And so he's just sitting there like, and then when he got enough attention, that's when he just tore into it and then held it up, but like it's covering everything on him, but he would just like lick one like finger at a time, and then like lick that finger, look at it, and I'm like, you are so silly, Oliver. That has nothing to do with anything. Except for the fact that I was just thinking about waiting on our dreams, waiting for our dreams. I'd always wanted a family, and I was so blessed with that. So blessed with two kids that I love, they love me back. It's wonderful. And it's just so unique, having dreams that we're waiting for. I read this quote, as when you dream, when you are waiting, you do it alone. A lot of times dreams, while we're waiting for dreams to happen, it's kind of like in a time of just being alone. It's kind of in a time of processing it. Check out this other quote. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken winged bird. They cannot fly. Walt Disney Company said, if you can dream it, you can do it. Always remember that this whole thing was started with a dream and a mouse. Can you imagine? One guy, I love the new statue at Disneyland at California Adventure. They have, right when you walk in the park, it's Walt Disney with a suitcase and a mouse. That's all he had to start his entire company. That was it. It's just, it blows my mind of just that waiting process. I read this story about this couple. A man and woman spot each other on the morning air shuttle. Sparks flew, but no words were exchanged as they stood together in the taxi line at Washington National. She got in a cab, looked back, and saw him running after her. She begged the cabbie to stop, but he kept going. In desperation, she scrawled her phone number on a piece of paper and pressed it against the back window, but she knew the man was too far away to read it. She went to her meeting, but she couldn't stop thinking about it. So she feigned illness and returned to the airport to wait for him to catch the shuttle back to New York. She waited all day, but he didn't show. She took her flight. When she was going to take her flight, she stepped into the gate area, and he was there. "What took you so long?" he asked. "I've been waiting here all day." The couple eventually married. Isn't that cool? It is something about dreams, and there's just this waiting process. I'm kind of convinced that God is not a microwave God. You know, does that make sense? Like, it's like you want something, and you can, like, force it to happen in 30 seconds, and you know it's not going to be good. Like, you know the directions on the package? The person who cooks have in their family, and they're gone, and you know it's your time to cook for, like, a week or something, and you get everything with, like, directions on the bag that's pre-frozen? Does no one know what I'm talking about here? Thank you, Andy, for being honest, and Bernie. Well, you know, there's always, like, three directions on there. It's like the deep fryer direction, and you can just say, "No, I don't have a deep fryer." Like, that is already off the charts. That's not happening. And then you have the microwave and the oven. And your microwave, you're like, "I could be eating in 30 seconds watching my favorite Netflix show right now. Or I could be waiting for 45 minutes in an oven." You know what I mean? The taste quality is different every time. Like, one, it's like, you know, it's delicious on like 10%. Like, the ends are like molten lava, then it's delicious, then it's an icicle. Antarctica is in the middle with a penguin, you know? Like, I'm describing burritos, which is pretty much all I eat that he's got. But you know the Hot Pockets or whatever? Let's be honest, okay? We've all had those days, Hot Pocket days or whatever. But I'm convinced that God works that way. Like, we can absolutely rush our dreams and force them to happen, right? But part of it, it's not going to work out so well. Part of it's going to be okay and comfortable, and part of it just won't work at all. But if we wait on God's timing, comes out so good. You know, that hot pocket is just delicious of a dream. Not knocking hot, oh, maybe I am knocking hot pockets. I read this also. Our lives are composed of some defining moments interspliced with a great deal of waiting. When your dreams lie dormant. You know, our attitude actually helps shape circumstances. Our attitude can actually change circumstances. A lot of times we actually wait on circumstances to happen to allow what dictates our attitude should be. That's not how God created us. God created us to have a praise and worship attitude to change the very foundation of our circumstances. Things can be altered just by the mere whisper of our praise. If this isn't in the notes, and Ty, you don't have to go searching, it's not in there. There's a verse, one of the weirdest verses and awkward verses in the Bible, just because you read it and go, "Wait, what?" It's, "And Moses changed God's mind." What? I didn't know that could happen. What is it? What do you mean? You know, it's this whole intercessory thing where the health is going one way. The doctors, you're done for. It's over. And all of a sudden, you whisper out a faith proclamation, and healing transforms. The very foundation of the circumstance was altered because our attitude was changed. How many of you wrestle with attitudes? Have you ever just wrestled with attitudes? No. Some people like raised their hand right away, and then some people didn't, but then you saw like their loved one next to him like look like okay. Guess you're not raising your hand today. I love this. This is such a crazy, interesting story. In 1867, Swedish chemist Alfred Nobel awoke one morning to read his own obituary in the local paper. That would change my attitude. What's going on? Is this heaven? Just kidding. Alfred Nobel, the inventor of dynamite, who died yesterday, devised a way for more people to be killed in a war than ever before. He died a very rich man. Actually, it was Alfred's older brother who had died. A news reporter had made a mistake, but the account had profound effect on Alfred. He decided he wanted to be known for something other than developing a means to kill people effectively and amassing a fortune in the process. So Nobel initiated the Nobel Prize, an award for scientists and writers who foster peace. Every man ought to have the chance to correct the epitaph in midstream and write a new one, Nobel said. Is that interesting? Did you know Nobel invented dynamite? But he's known for the Nobel Peace Prize. pause on the message. Is anyone too cold? Do we want to turn up the temperature? Can we just turn it up a couple of notches? I think instead of being like 40, crank it a little higher. Just kidding, I don't know what it's at. Continuing back with Joseph, I wanted to look at his life of what happens when your dreams lie dormant. What happens in between? You get the dream, and you're waiting for the dream to come true. What happens? What happens in the meantime? And Joseph faces that when he has his dream, and then he's convicted of rape and thrown into jail. It's a horrible way to spend waiting on a dream. Genesis 39:20-40:23. That's a lot of numbers. And I'm going to read quite a bit because I want to give the complete story. Some of us may have never heard about it before. Starting in verse 20. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison. Is that interesting? Just think about that. Wherever he goes, he surfaces to the top. He's in jail because of what he was accused of doing to the master, but then the master saw what he was doing in jail and promoted him to run the jail. Because God had a plan for him to run the world. God will always position you in places that you don't like to refine you and purpose you for where he's called you. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. God is always there, even if you don't feel him. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offered their master the king of offended the master of the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended them. After they had been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Have you heard, some of you have heard this story before? Maybe you've seen the VeggieTales. It's out there. More people said yes to VeggieTales than yes to this story. Okay, moving on. Verse 6. Then Joseph came to them the next morning. He saw that they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officials, who were in custody with him in the master's house, why do you look so sad today? "We both had dreams," he answered, "but there is no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, this is key, I'm going to come back to this later, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." Think about Joseph. He interpreted dreams once before, right? He interpreted them himself of what he thought they were, and it got him into a huge mess. Sitting in prison, I think, has refined him a little bit. Dreams belong to be interpreted by God. Good, he's growing. Verse 9. So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dreams. He said to him, "In my dream I saw a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed, and its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and put the cup in his hand." "This is what it means," Joseph said to him. "The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to a position, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well with you, remember me." What is his one job? Remember Joseph. Okay. "Remember me. Get me out of this place. Remember me and show me kindness. Mention to me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. I was foreseeably carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put into the dungeon." When the chief baker saw that Joseph had given a favorable interpretation, he said to Joseph, "I too had a dream." You know when, like, the things are good, everyone wants to jump on board? "I had a dream also. Let me tell you this. Tell me my good fortune." Open the fortune cookie. This guy has no idea what's going on. "I too had a dream. On my head were three baskets of bread. In the top basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." "This is what it means," Joseph said. "The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head and impale your body on a pole." That would not be a love. You just told him good news. "But the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." Okay. Jumping down to verse 19b, "And the birds will eat away your flesh." That's gross. Verse 20. "Now the third day was Pharaoh's birthday, and he gave a feast for all his officials. He lifted up the heads of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker in the presence of his officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position so that he once again put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he impaled the chief baker, just as Joseph has said to them in the interpretation." Verse 23, "The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He had forgotten him." Have you ever heard the Hee-Haw song? "Gloom, despair, and agony on me deep. Dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all." Oh, man, Joseph. Poor Joseph. Do you know, no physical prison will ever compare to the mental prison that you'll put yourself into? Do you know that? Some of us, most of us, will never experience jail or prison. We'll experience the prison of bitterness that we'll put ourselves into. The prison of emotions, the prison of depression, the prison of things that we do to ourselves deliberately. Sometimes we can't help it, and sometimes we can help it. Sometimes it's a chemical thing, and sometimes it's the thing that just happens. I wanted to talk about kind of the overlay between Joseph and Job in this situation. Kind of like the difference and what happened to both of them. Job, as we know, was loved by God, just had it all put together. I mean, he had it all. And then one day, Job 1:6 or 8 happens. "One day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. The Lord said to Satan, 'Where have you come from?' Satan answered the Lord, 'From roaming throughout the earth, going back and forth on it.' Then the Lord said to Satan, Have you considered my servant Job? You know, I don't know if I'd want to be successful enough where God brings up my name to Satan. Like, have you thought about this guy? I don't know. I read the Bible differently, I guess. Then the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. Think of this. Will his, it's kind of like a wager that's going on. Will his attitude change from the circumstances? Or will his attitude change the circumstances? So this moment, the enemy looks at Job and says this. Does Job fear God for nothing? Satan replied. Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? It's easy to worship God when nothing is going wrong. You have blessed the work of his hands, so that his flocks and herds are spread through the land. But now, stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he surely will curse you to your face. Some of us have lost much less in our lives and cursed more than what Job did. Job lost it all. Everything. One servant ran and said, hey, this thing fell and it killed your whole family. At that same moment, another, your all your crops, they just caught on fire, and they're going through. Your wealth is gone. Your family is gone. And then it gets to the point where all of a sudden his health is gone. It says that he had boils and he was scraping them with stones to get rid of them. Job's reaction was just, I'm going to praise God. I'm still here and he's still with me. It's those moments. Have you ever lost something? Like, have you ever lost something? It could be like, something substantial or something just silly. I you know that first panic, maybe it's just me, maybe it's everyone, but you know how it's like everyone else's fault except for your own for losing that thing? Do you know what I'm talking about? There's a couple subtle head nods right there. I was gonna take a shower and I take my watch off and I put it on the coffee table and I'm like, I don't wanna lose it, I don't wanna misplace it. I gotta put it right here, take the shower, hop out, get dressed, get my hair did, whatever. And I go to get the watch, not there. So then, you know, it's like, I put the watch right there. Someone moved it, okay? And then I went on this whole like process of interrogation through all the family members. Have you done one of these things? Yes, okay, thanks Miranda for, thank you. It's just, yeah, we got it, okay, thanks. So then I go and I start with my beautiful, loving, forgiving wife. And I go, babe, I think you moved my watch, which is why I shouldn't have said that in that way. She said, have you seen the watch? It was right there. She goes, no one moved your watch. And I'm like, okay. Do full circle the whole family and then come back. So then I go, and I go to the family members, the Patty's parents, I go to her siblings, I'm going to everyone, and then I work my way down to London, I bring her to I'm like, London, did you see Daddy's watch? It was right here. Did you see it? Did it get moved? Where did it go? Where is it? And she's like, no, Daddy. And she's like, can I go watch Princess Shortcake now? I'm like, just go. And then I grab Ollie, and I carry him over, sit him down at the table. this is true. And I'm like, Ollie, did you see the watch? And he goes, and he looks like nothing's there, like I was supposed to bring him to a toy to play with, and there's nothing, and he has no idea what to do, so he just he walks like E.T. right now, so he just like walks away and scurries off, and I'm like, where is it? Someone moved my watch, and I'm like losing my mind, and after a while, this is at Peggy's parents' house, and I have the suitcase, and I'm just like, fine, whatever, I just need to get some other things, and so I open my suitcase, watch is right there. And then I remembered, right before I got in the shower, I shouldn't leave it on the coffee table. I should put it where no one's going to touch it. Have you been there? Everyone has done something like that at some point. being lost. What do you do? What do you do? That's got a segue now. What do you do when you're on a journey of kind of losing your way, in a sense? You're going after your dream, and you're halted in the middle. The enemy stops you, something happens, you're not going after it, you have a life like Joseph. It's just unforeseen circumstances happen. Do you allow the circumstances to be bigger or your attitude to be bigger? Do you go interrogating everyone, including a child that can't talk? What's the process? I wrote down four things that Job faced throughout the book of Job. And I really think it's true. I really think that it happens to the best of us. I really believe that it can happen in an instant or through a lifetime. But it's kind of the process of just being in the middle. The first one is isolation. 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 The Dalai Lama said, too much self-centered attitude, brings isolation. Result? Loneliness, fear, anger. The extreme self-centered attitude is a source of suffering. Isolation. Isolation is dangerous because when you're going to accomplish a dream, a lot of times your dreams can only be accomplished when other people come together. Isolation. The enemy loves putting us into circumstances that will cause us to retreat into isolation. Cause us to move away from people, move away from friends, move away from family. Because they're the ones that cause dreams to come true. Isolation. Number two of the process, isolation leads to loneliness. Isolation leads to loneliness. A lot of times, it's not necessarily the feeling of loneliness of people, because a lot of times we could be surrounded by 50 people at McDonald's and still feel lonely. Be surrounded at a birthday party and still feel lonely. The root is, we don't feel lonely of people, we feel lonely of God. We feel like we're alone, and where's God? We feel like we're just in the middle of this thing and on an island and no one else is near us, even though we're surrounded by people. But in reality, it's just we feel lonely of God. So we don't know how to go after that. And if that's not the worst of it, it spirals down two more times. Spirals into the pit of bitterness. I added pit, really it's just bitterness. You know, so it's okay to be bitter with God. It's okay to tell God that you're frustrated. It's okay to say you're angry. God, I don't like this right now. Well, I just put you in the oven. You still have 45 minutes to keep baking to your finished product. I'm sorry if the heat is hot. That's what will transform you. You know, I was thinking about, just not in my notes, just think about this. As my sister-in-law bakes the cake, she puts all the ingredients together, stirs it up. You have to put it in the oven for how much? Does anyone know how long a cake goes in the oven for? Depends on the pan. This is news to me. I just put some in the oven and hope it happens. So I was thinking about this. What if Raquel, my sister-in-law, took the flour, the eggs, the whatever else goes in the cake, all that stuff, stirs it together, and puts it on the counter for 45 minutes? That would get kind of gross. What's funny is that's what people do with their lives. They put all the right ingredients in, and they try to avoid the things that would sharpen and refine them that God puts them into. Try to avoid the heat, and really, you sit there for the time allotment of refining, and you're unrefined at the end. Right? Bitterness. Bitterness springs up with the people around us. A lot of times it's the people that's closest to us. Because the enemy loves to move us into loneliness and solitude, and then tries to isolate us even more with bitterness and engraving and alienating every person around us. Right? I've been there. I know that feeling. C.S. Lewis said this: "Not that I am, I think, in much danger of ceasing to believe God. The real danger is coming to believe such dreadful things about him. The conclusion I dread is not, so there's no God after all, but, so this is what God's really like." Deceive yourself no longer. C.S. Lewis. Do you know people that respond out of emotions in the Bible towards other people because of circumstances, usually their story doesn't end well. We learned about this in the Ark of the Covenant series that we did. Do you remember the window watcher? Oh, I could re-preach this sermon series. That's cool. There's a lot of window watchers. That one fell out of the window. But this one didn't fall out. So David has the Ark of the Covenant. He's bringing the presence of God home. And he's on his sixth step into the city with the Ark of the Covenant. And it's at this moment it dawns on him that the Ark of the Covenant has rested in six places. And now this, his home, becoming the seventh place it's going to rest, the final resting place of the Ark of the Covenant on the history of the earth. We don't know where it went. It was the last place it was ever at. And all of a sudden, he has this realization. He's on his sixth step, stepping onto his seventh step with the Ark of the Covenant into the seventh location of the Ark of the Covenant. And if you know anything about numbers, seventh means it's finished. It's complete. It's over. And at that moment, he loses his mind and starts praising God. He says he twirled and danced. That's where we get dance like David dance. He loses it and starts praising God with everything. His emotions, he's flaying around, and all of a sudden, the Bible shifts the perspective and looks at a lady in a window, and her response is, the Bible has a word, but we don't really have a word for it, we just have a sound for it. The word is, that's the word in the Bible. Who does he think he is? Undignified king? What does he even think he's doing? She's bitter because her family lineage should have been king at that moment. And David was king. And he's dancing around. And surely my father or my brother could have taken over and done a better job than that fool. And it gets to David, and David says, really? Your circumstances? You're living in a palace with no mortgage, no rent, unlimited food. You can do anything you want. And you're sitting with a bad attitude? Complaining? And then David says, oh, if that's what you're going to pass on to your children, God's going to strike you with barrenness. She never had a kid. Interesting. She's not a spiritual mother. She never passed down that. And I need to say this. Don't ever have condensation if you do not have a child or cannot have a child. That's not what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is there's mothers and there's spiritual mothers, and there's passing down and inheritance that passes down. And we've talked about that, and we will talk about that more. But things don't end well for her. Number four, everyone say silence. Sorry, ironic. Silence can be deadly. It's in these moments we really question God. Do you exist? Is this real? Is this happening? Questions just spring up. The question, silence. We don't hear anything. We're isolated, we're alone, and we're bitter. The enemy has sunken that in, and all of a sudden we repel everyone else, and then we're stuck there in silence. Because A, no one wants to be around us right now, and we're not hearing from God. Silence. Check out this story. Hey, can we turn on the air a little bit? Sorry, I got hot. Kumar, a Christian in South India, was grieved because none of the 13 people he had invited had come to watch Billy Graham evangelistic broadcast at his home on December 23rd. He began to pray, and around 9 p.m. he felt compelled to invite his wife's sister's family to watch the next night's broadcast. The family had no phone, so Kumar asked a neighbor to bring them to the phone for an urgent message. When his brother-in-law, Satish, reached the phone, Kumar asked him and his family to catch a bus to the city. Satish said he had no money. Kumar encouraged him to borrow the money and said that he would reimburse Satish for the tickets. Satish consented. At 4 a.m., he and his family boarded a bus for the long trip to Kumar's house. They arrived at 5 p.m., and an hour later, they watched the My Hope telecast from Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. Afterward, Kumar gave his testimony and asked if the others wanted to put their faith in Christ. They were all looking at each other, and Kumar wondered why. Then Satish, noticeably distressed, stood and explained that he had lost his job because the tea factory he worked for had closed. Further, the company was demanding that the family vacate their company-owned house. Seeing no hope, the family had decided that on September 25th, they were all going to commit suicide. Now they saw what they had in hope in Jesus, so they prayed for with Kumar and accepted Christ. Satish said he felt like a new man. After staying several more days with Kumar, the family returned home, ready to face the future with Christ. I wanted to tell this story based on the opposite of silence. Not just loudness, but speaking with a purpose. You know, the one guy who was sitting there as a Christian, he was frustrated and bitter and kind of upset that no one showed up to his party, right? At that moment, he could have just isolated himself and just questioned, like, what am I really doing here? Is this even worth it? But he decided to keep going. And he said, you know what? Let's get someone out here. I'm not giving up. And so he felt compelled. And it was out of his diligence to break out of that bitterness and that silence the miracle happened. I want to encourage you, if you're feeling bitter, find out why. Is it because someone said something? Is it because something happened? Is it really just because the enemy wants to keep you silent because he knows what you could do in the kingdom of God? Really, bitterness, there's no wealth to it, but it'll cost you a lot. What's holding you back? So getting back to Joseph, forgotten men, but remembered by God. Genesis 40:23. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. It was that moment that Joseph could have really decided, I'm out, it's over, it's done. This is my lot in life. I'll never amount to anything, and I could just sit in jail forever. But he kept going. He's like, you know what? That guy might not have remembered me, but God remembers me. If I don't become more diligent now than ever, it's not going to happen. So he kept rising to the top. Everywhere that Joseph went, God rose him to the top. So If you find yourself in any of the four areas I mentioned, start with forgiveness. Mentioned it last week, but it's worth mentioning again. Start with forgiveness. I'm isolated. Well, start forgiving random people. Bring forgiveness about. Colossians 1:13-14. For he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. The second one, all interpretation belongs to God. Do you know it's really easy to interpret our lives based on our past? I'm only this because I was here. I can only amount to this because of this. I can only do this because of that or this. And a lot of times we can even spiral even further and say, I can only do this because what they said I can do. Are you living your life based off of what a parent said or what a person said or what a coworker said? Your worth isn't based on what people say. I had a word this week for someone that I gave, and it was just, I was thinking about this. If God is king and we're adopted into the faith, doesn't that make us the adopted child of God? We're the inheritance prince and princess. Our worth far surpasses anything and everything. And we allow people to steal that away by saying what we are and what we're not. Your worth is so much. Your worth. Genesis 40, verse 8. We both had dreams, he answered, but there was no one to interpret them. Then Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. Check out this quote. Esther asked, why people are so sad? That's simple, said the old man. They are the prisoners of their personal history. Everyone believes that the main aim in life is to follow a plan. They never ask if the plan is theirs or if it was created by another person. They accumulate experiences, memories, things, other people's ideas, and it is more than they can possibly cope with. And that is why they forget their dreams. I'm going to totally mess up his name, but Paulo Coelho, the czar. Three. Patience will help possess your dreams. Patience will help possess your dreams. We don't like it, but patience works out our dreams, right? It's hard. It's hard waiting for that burrito to finish in the oven when you're on your lunch break and you only got 30 minutes and it's going to take 25 minutes. And you know your mouth is going to be burned. I was thinking about this. Just a couple more stories and then I'm going to end, okay? I know we're going a little bit long. Is that okay? Is that all right? And if you fall asleep, that's all right. I'll give you a Snuggie or a blanket later, okay? I remember, have you ever had a dream that you are so passionate about, and whenever you saw someone else in that kind of realm or that sphere of that dream, you overanalyze everything they did, and you're like, I do better than I, what, are you kidding me right now? I was in that situation years ago, and I remember I was on maintenance at a church, and I was convinced I could preach better than the senior pastor at that time. I could not preach better than the senior pastor at that time. I know for a fact now. I remember watching the senior pastor preach and going, oh, I could have told that story better. That point would have been better here. And I was overanalyzing everything. And I remember I had that heart like, God, I want to get up there. I want to preach. You promote. Come on, get me up there. Like, you have scripture on this. God will bring you before kings, right? Like, do it. And I remember, what was it? Half a decade later, I got asked to speak at the midweek service because everyone was out of town at a conference. That's awkward when you're asked to preach because no one's there. Can you preach? Just combine the youth group and anyone that shows up, right? And I was like, at that point, I waited 5 years. Yes, God, I got this. I don't care if one adult shows up. I'm going to preach my shoes off. Like, it's going to be the best message. And I waited 5 years, and God had been refining that pride away in me. And it wasn't out of a lot of people. I really feel a lot of people have been like, I'm only going to preach at one person. I had reached a point where I didn't care anymore. It got refined away. And that was one of the coolest defining moments on a Wednesday night. We had spontaneous baptisms in the middle. There was five families that showed up and like half the youth group. We were inside there and I did, I was preaching on Naaman in the Bible with leprosy. And then the baptism was right there. I opened it, I hopped in and said, who wants to get baptized? I don't know what I was thinking. Anyways, so I did it. And the craziest thing happened. Every family that showed up got baptized. 3/4 of the youth group got baptized. Everyone who's in the courtyard we're in our clothes. There was no clothes to change it to. It was spontaneous. There's no towels. Hopped in the baptism, and then they walked up the back of the church and waited outside. But it's in LA during the summertime. So my house was next door, so I got to change. But so it was one of the craziest moments. Out of that, those families were so sold out to what God had done in their life, they actually were like, where can we serve in the church? We've never helped out. We've never done anything. And I'm like, you can start in the youth group. I doubled my youth volunteers in one night. Like, God moves when he works things out, and we're not stuck with bitterness and pride. And then years later, God finally stepped it up, and I preached on a Sunday morning. And it was so sweet. You know those moments where you're not sitting there filled with pride or envy or frustration anymore because God took years to work those out, beat me up over it, sat in every service, 3 services in a row, heard the same message, knew him by heart by the last service. But I loved it. It was at that moment that God finally said, all right, you're doing this. You're stepping up. It's those moments of time that really work on us, really refine us. Psalms 105, 17 through 19, and he sent a man before them, Joseph, sold as a slave. They bruised his feet with shackles. His neck was put in irons. Till what he forfeited came to pass, till the word of the Lord proved him true. It took 13 years, but the answers came. Last point, and a lot of times preachers will say like last point, or we're summing up just to get everyone's attention to pay attention again, even though I'm not summing up right now. But last point, and then it's in there. Bitterness can be beat. You don't have to be eaten by bitterness in the past or the present. It can be beaten. You don't have to live in that. I'm going to misquote it because it's not in my notes, but I'm just reminded. What did they say about revenge? Whoa. Don't get on your bad side. No. By having revenge, it's like drinking poison and hoping that they die or get sick. Is that unforgiveness? That's probably why they included my nose. I probably said, don't say this right now. Okay. Ephesians 4, 31 through 32. Let's see what God says to do about bitterness. Get rid of all bitterness, rage and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just in Christ God forgave you. This is the last story, and then we're going to stand up. During a child's sermon one Sunday morning, I held up a summer shirt that I had worn around the house. I told the children that someone said the shirt was ugly and should be thrown away. I'm having trouble forgiving the person who said those mean things, I said. Do you think I should forgive that person? My daughter, Alicia, 6, raised her hand. You should. But why? The person hurt my feelings, I said. Because you're married to her, Alicia replied. Let's stand up. Let's close our eyes right now. God will always make a way if you'll trust him. God will always make a way if you trust him. God will always make a way if you sit and wait patiently, knowing that he has a plan, knowing that he's refining you, knowing that he's putting you into an oven to refine all the ingredients that's been in your life so far to make something so wonderful. God has a plan for your life. He has a purpose for your life. He has a dream that he has embedded deeply into your life. I mentioned earlier during prayer that a dream is kind of like a seed sitting dormant for a long, long time until rain can break it out of that and grow roots. My dream for this sermon series, your eyes are closed, sir, that we start putting water where there's been a drought, that seeds that have been lying dormant would be reawakened. Not just to sprout out and see all the dreams come true during this sermon series, but my dream is that the roots take place during this sermon series. That the needed water would come into our lives and roots would take place and we'd be able to start seeing our dreams sprouting up. It's a good thing. Lord, I pray you'd work on our lives. I pray that whatever we're dealing with, if it's isolation, loneliness, bitterness, whatever we're sitting in the middle of, work in our hearts, work in our lives. Lord, let us know that we are loved by those around us and by you. God, we love you. We worship you. If you're here today and this message just resonated with you, you felt like you were in your own personal prison. You're your own jailer, your own bars, everything. If you're sitting there and you're saying, I need out, would you just raise your hand? And everyone's eyes are closed. I just want to be able to pray over you and just be praying over you this week. Awesome. I see your hands. Praise God. Cool. Lord, you see who needs you today. Has needed you last week, last month, last year, and this month, this week, this year. Break them out of what's holding them.